Hey friends, you're listening to the Hope and Hard Pits podcast where we're talking all things resilience and revolution. I'm your host, Andre.
And I'm your other host, Trishes.
And today we have very special guests on our show today. We are joined by Ashley and Shabazz Larkin. They work together building an app called True Voice. Ashley is the head of wellness, Shabazz is the head of content, and they're working together to make mindfulness, meditation, and wellness practices accessible, starting with Black and Brown people. Ashley is also an artist and family therapist, and Shabazz is an artist and author. We are also like, we go way back. These are like good friends of mine. I have a rule on the show where I don't just invite my friends on, because that was the first thing that someone told me. Like, when you start a podcast, don't just invite your friends onto your show. But it just so happens that my friends also do really dope shit, so I get to invite some of my friends on from time to time as well to talk about the amazing world-changing things that they're doing. I'm so glad to have y'all on the show. Welcome.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for the introduction. Thanks for having us.
I'm so glad to be here.
Yes. I'm glad to finally have done something worthy of being on your show.
Right. We got out of the friend category.
Jumped into podcast guest level friends.
This is too funny. No. Okay. First off, really a big part of the change has been a shift in my focus of my work, where we started the Hope and Heartfield podcast to mainstream ideas about nonviolent struggle, because people, you know, this, we started in the heyday of the Black Lives Matter movement, and a lot of us was hitting the streets, but we didn't really know what to do. And I was finding all this information, and I was like, why don't more people know about this stuff? Like, we should learn this stuff in school. So we were just interviewing people who like toppled dictators and started international movements. But I learned eventually, which is going to segue us perfectly into the conversation. I learned eventually, and I just wrote about this too in a strategy guide that I'm writing, but that you have to deal with two things while trying to change the world, especially through direct action. One is the most obvious, and that is the violent repressions of the powers that be. They are not going to be like, oh, you want to change the world? Well, here's the key to my office, you know?
Right.
But the second thing that you have to contend with is the clashing of different people's brokenness within the movement. And that can be more devastating. I should stop talking in the abstract. It was more devastating to me to find out that we are not the types of people who can change the world yet, because we have to change. And so that got me to center wellness in movement work and in my own life, because all of this work started with me experiencing depression, anxiety, CPTSD through racial stress and through trying to do something about that racial stress. So all of that to say, one, the conversation has changed and you are the perfect guest to participate in it. And I'm so glad about the work that y'all are doing, because I feel like y'all are on a similar path of bringing wellness, mindfulness, you know, to Black and Brown people. I remember you posted something a while back, Shabazz, that I'm probably going to put in my next book on Facebook. I think it was 2017. You posted on Facebook, I don't want to be woke no more. I want to go back to sleep.
Oh man.
And that is how I have been feeling. So all that said, why don't we start with True Voice? Tell us about the app, and then I want to go back and talk about your stories and how you decided to come about doing and all that. But first, what is True Voice? What is the work that you're doing there? What does it look like?
Well, again, first of all, just thank you for inviting us today. Yes. I have listened to many of your episodes, and I'm just honored to be here. So starting with that. But True Voice, you know, True Voice to me is about agency. I think that's the overarching theme of it. But it's a social mindfulness app that has meditation, mindfulness talks, a whole slew of content and practices for folks to partake in, but also a community, a live community where we have conversations, discussions, do live practices together. So there's these, I'm a family therapist. So to me, the two must exist, right? You have this individual component where you're learning about self, you're discovering self, you're doing this inner work, but we don't do that in a silo. You know, we come from a context. And so I think we have to do this work in community as well. And so these two pieces of True Voice go side by side. It's these individual practices that you have the opportunity to discover, but also this communal practice that we get to do together. And so I'm really excited about what we're up to. I don't know if Shabazz, you want to add anything to what I've...
No, I think that you got it there. You know, it's very important, I think, for us to be speaking about how sort of the people who are organizing are taking care of themselves. You know, there is this idea of trying to do something alone is very painful. You know, one of the things that I'm learning, there's a organizer here in Nashville, Tennessee, by the name of Jamel Campbell-Gooch, and he's an educator to me and a good friend of mine. And, you know, he speaks, you know, I spoke to him about this wanting to go back to sleep, you know, this, you know, I spoke to him about this moment. And part of the thing that he teaches is about, you know, collective, collective risk, right? Like when I'm trying to do, when I'm trying to like, you know, change democracy by myself, you know, I can fizzle all the way out, all the way to nothing, you know, but when we're sort of working together in this way, you know, much can be done. This sort of collective risk that as a community together, we can say go to, but you know, but the same is true for wellness is, you know, we're sort of seeking the collective risk to take care of ourselves, you know, because there is this impression of Harriet's gun at our back, you know, hey, go do something, get to something. But this, but even a welcome pressure to press on will, you know, really can make us irrelevant. You know, like, you know, the movements that we sort of celebrate throughout history didn't exist with lone heroes like the ones we see on in the movies, you know right. they exist with people that sort of understood the power of taking care of each other, that understood the power of the other side. And I don't know, I think that it's just, you know, I think that Ash and I, the unsaid thing is that, you know, I think that Ash and I see that this is a part of our contribution is to help the accessibility of these sort of mindfulness ideas in a communal setting so that we can hopefully birth a new part of culture, you know, or rebirth this part of culture that's always been there.
Yeah. I love that because my biggest gripe with sort of wellness in Western capitalist culture and the systems that we're in is that it places all of the emphasis on the individual and the individual controlling how they are feeling, which in a lot of Indigenous practices and other cultures, there's a lot of community involved. There's a lot of co-regulation and stuff like that. And I do find this work to be really lonely sometimes, thinking about it through that lens of like, I need to make myself feel better about how awful everything is. I'm curious because I know, especially with this app, that community aspect seems incredibly important. And it also seems like accessibility for Black and Brown people is very important to you both. With both of your backgrounds and Ashley as a family therapist, what approaches do you take through the app with making it more accessible to Black and Brown people?
It's a good question. It's a good question because there's some other apps that teach meditation and mindfulness that are lovely and very helpful and were the the main teachers of the practice for me when I began. Mm. But there's one particular app that's very popular. The person that that leads the main meditation looks and sounds like somebody who is really racist towards me. You know,
wait, is like, Foghorn Leghorn hosting his
meditation? Oh my gosh. You know, so there is that sort of unfamiliarity. You know, and so it's not like we're teaching some new brand of mindfulness. Mm-hmm. You know, we're teaching the same thing, except our hope is to create a community of people that use our language, that sound like mm-hmm. our mother, that sound like our brother or our mm-hmm. sister, that sound like a wise coach, mm-hmm. and that understands our unique place in the world. That's a big thing, is sort of authentic voices. Mm, is a part, and also just the sensitivity is that when you say, hey, let's have a conversation about anger, but the only thing that we can't talk about is politics. Mm. Well, for Black people, it's like, what? I mean, Ashley and I are living in the state of Tennessee, where our senators, our elected senators and congressmen have been kicked out of their seats.
Right.
We just had a white supremacist march downtown just a few days ago.
Yeah.
Our governor is burning books, and the sort of egregious acts of violence that are sort of being purported on a day-to-day basis to sort of say, oh, but you're not allowed to speak about that, means you're precluding a large part of the pain and anger that I deal with.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we have to work even harder to say, hey, I'm not going to blanket take these kinds of conversations off the table. Mm-hmm. We're going to make a space that is safe for all people to sort of discuss these things where they are. We're willing to sort of go there and speak about the things that are hurting us, that are affecting us, that may be off the table in other communities. Mm-hmm. And that, and even specific to us, is our sort of, you know, Black and brown communities, like our spiritual connection is deeply rooted in how we live, how we interact, mm-hmm. and how we see the world. And so that also is invited in our particular community, so that we can, because we know that this is what people need. Like, you know, some people, they don't want to hear meditation unless they hear that their Jesus or their deity or whatever it is their religious upbringing is also invited. You know, we're not kicking those things out. They're allowed to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Those are just a few examples I could think of. Right.
Yeah. And I totally agree on that last one that you brought up, Shabazz. I think sometimes we have to compartmentalize ourselves so much when we show up in a wellness space. There's only pieces of ourselves that we get to bring to the table, you know, and we've been really intentional that you get to bring your whole self, right? You get to bring your ancestral practices. You get to bring your spiritual practices. You get to bring your belief in the science and the facts. You get to bring all of it. Like, all of it is welcome. And there's a whole self that we get to address that sometimes experiences leave out because those parts of wellness aren't tangible. You can't boil them down to the bottom line science, right? And so we bring those to the table because that's a part of our stories that get left off and we get disconnected from. And part of what we're up to is helping us reconnect to the things that we've been disconnected from.
That last part is like big for us because many times we come into these spaces and for Black and brown culture specifically, there's so much demonization to our indigenous and our cultural practices, right? Yeah. Oh, that thing, don't do that thing, that's demonic. Oh, that thing over there, that's unholy. Oh, that thing over there is going to mess up your... And so for us is like, no, actually, we come to the perspective, this is, you know, part of the reason why we call it True Voices, to examine what's already there. A big part of our practice is sort of like the restorative wellness, to understand that these things that have been there, that have always been there, that you've practiced, that your grandma taught you, that your pastor taught you, that you learned in your community, like some of those things, you know, you can let go. But there's actually a lot more there that you can trust in and that you can lean into. And here's the connection with other mindfulness practices and actually this movement practice that y'all doing, this sacred tradition that some call twerking is actually a somatic practice that, you know what I'm saying? Like, hey, we believe in that. We can go and find healing and something that you said, Andre, I remember you talking about wobbling in the streets. What did you say? I remember you talking about wobbling in the streets to dance down Babylon. Uh-huh. And I love that, you know, because I think that that's the way that this is sort of us practicing like our traditions in a way that can bring health and healing to our communities and to ourselves.
Beautiful.
So I was just going to say, you know, there's a story I tell sometimes, like, you know, in my teenage years, I didn't grow up in the church. You know, we went to church on Easter and major holidays. And in my teenage years, you know, my mom and I ended up going to this church and there was an altar call. And I was moved. I wanted what these people had, you know. And so I went down the aisle and they took me into this back room and gave me a piece of paper. And they said, piece of paper was rededicate your life, get saved, join the church, get baptized, all these choices. And I had no idea what this stuff meant. You know, I didn't grow up in this context. Right. And I checked all the boxes. I just wanted it. I checked every single box, not knowing what any of it meant, but I wanted it all, you know? And sometimes I think of this wellness thing as that, like, we want this. Our people want this. We desire and we long for this thing, but we don't have the language for it. We don't know the names of these practices. We don't know what they feel like to us anymore. And so to me, true voice is a place to discover, you know, all these, it's an option. It's choices for you to decide what belongs to you and what doesn't. And it's an offering in that way. And so I think that we offer language and we offer, that was another thing that was difficult for me when I was checking all those boxes, not knowing the meaning of these terms and accessibility to it all. It was just, there was a disconnect. And so that's part of what we're up to as well.
I appreciate so much of what y'all have shared and what you're doing. And I can't help but ask this question because I think that something, to your point, Shabazz, about things being demonized, right? I think that when I look at the history of what's happened to us, in our encounter with white colonization, is that the colonizers really wanted to separate us from any sources of power that we would have had from our ancestral lands, right? And so our language, our spiritualities, family, like breaking up the family too. Like, and so what happened, I think, on the spiritual side of things, or in the realm of spirituality, is that they wanted to monopolize access to spiritual power, divine presence, all of that. And so then it becomes all of your religions, all of your beliefs, all of your spiritualities, that's demon stuff. You're supposed to solely depend on white Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're African people, so we do what we do, we synthesize, we remix, you know, but there's a part of that that I think endured, you know, in Black Christianity, and not just Black Christianity, but you've heard those group grew up in a context like mine, which was multi-ethnic, but basically white, right? And so, you know, pastors will spend a whole Sunday preaching against yoga, you know, in some of these traditions, or preaching against meditation or mindfulness or whatever. And so we have these ideas that something that actually has been helpful to us for centuries is off limits, right? I wasn't supposed to spend that much time on this but I think that's a part of the context that we're in. There's another side of it that I think you two touched on, where the more we see white people doing something is the more we're suspicious of it. So I'm like, you talking to me about meditation, But I don't see no niggas doing, I don't see no niggas meditating. You know?
Well, the funny thing is, like, whiteness will demonize something until it can appropriate it and capitalize off of it. Right.
Yeah. Oh my God. Perfectly said. Right. So, so like, until I see the yellow book, you know, like Resilience for Dummies, but it's like meditation for niggas, right? Like, I'm not going to do it. Right. You know? Right. So I'll teach the class meditation for niggas. But we kind of juxtapose between those two things. So I say all that to say that I think that because of that, we can find ourselves in a position where we don't believe that this has anything to do with, you know, my experience.
Right.
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 Because on the one hand, like, I was told all I need to do is pray, which didn't work in my situation. And on the other hand, I don't really see a lot of examples of people like me, you know, experiencing this. So when you talk about the neo-Nazi march that just happened in Nashville, the fact that the governor is burning books, and the fact that Brother Jones and his colleagues were expelled from, you know, all of these things are assaults on the Black psyche.
Yeah.
But what does mindfulness and meditation have to do with that? How is it going to help? That was my long road of getting to.
You know what?
Like, what does that have to do with anything? Yeah.
I want to speak about this because there's two parts. The first thing I want to say is that meditation and mindfulness doesn't really land in the Western world until like the 60s and 70s. And one of the like major, it's really, you're talking about a really short time frame of like, of meditation and mindfulness in the Western world. Mm-hmm. And one of the preeminent people sort of involved with bringing that is a brother. His name is Thich Nhat Hanh. And I'm just saying this because I consider this my teacher, right? And so he is this sort of like Vietnamese, you know, I call him my nigga Thich because, you know, because... he's a real deal. He's my real deal. And he comes from like a war-torn sort of world. And, you know, he was friends with Dr. Martin Luther King. He's the one that got Martin Luther King into all the trouble that he did post, you know, when he started protesting the Vietnam War. Yeah. He's the one that sort of got him to get in that, which, you know, people might not like him for those reasons, But I think that tradition is sort of new, you know, new to all of all of the Western world, right? So that should be said from a historical standpoint. Mm-hmm. But on the other end of the stick, I think that everybody got sort of a grand education to what it means to be woke.
Yes.
Right. Like this is sort of turn. This is dying out. Right. This is a term that's sort of like it's losing its. Anyways, it's controversial. It's got. Anyways, it's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We know.
We know.
We know what you're saying.
But really, really, at its heart, mindfulness is there to do one thing, but to make us more aware.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at the teachings of the Buddha, which is also, you know, obviously Thich Nhat Hanh is teaching essentially his, you know, modern teachings of, you know, Buddhist ideas. We see that the Buddha is teaching, he always says, I'm teaching suffering and I'm teaching the way out of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm teaching the suffering that happens in the world. This is to not look away from it, but to look into it.
Yeah.
There is suffering. There is, and This is the second point is that there is a way to suffering. Like, there's a way that this happened to us. And then the third teaching is there actually is a version of life without suffering. So that can exist too. And then the fourth point is that there is a way to get out of this suffering that we're all experiencing. This is essentially all that sort of the crux of all of meditation and mindfulness is this, that suffering and ending suffering. And the idea is that when we can see, we can alleviate the suffering. When we can see that, hey, by the way that I'm acting here, I'm causing suffering. If I can see that, then I can end that suffering. The way that, you know, I'm treating this person here, you know, or I'm treating myself. But sometimes we can't see it. When we're unaware that when I cuss out that dude on the interstate, actually that dude actually had some other kind of problems. And that caused a thing, chain reaction to this and to that. Oh, when I eat this beef, I'm actually causing more CO2 emissions than a car on the street. And so actually, this is actually hurting the planet more. This is awareness. This is sort of opening stuff. This is what the mindfulness practice does to us. I think that I'm answering your question, but I might be taking a long road to get there.
No, first off, thank you for that. And I think that we're getting really close because... Okay, so like, I think the step further, right, is when you talk about suffering, right? Most of the people that we see talking about wellness, mindfulness, are white, right? And we assume that they're not suffering very much. Wow. Right? Mm-hmm. So like they're talking about like how this is helping them get through the day and stuff like that. And the worst thing that I can imagine that a white man might have encountered today is maybe he's going through a divorce, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's terrible. That's horrible, right? I was going to say something really trivial, but no, like there's something, and that can be devastating.
You're saying you can't really imagine they're having like a grand suffering on the scale that maybe yours.
I could imagine that that's really hard and that mindfulness will help him get through it, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But when that store was shot up in Buffalo, New York City in 2022, I was afraid to go to the grocery store in LA. Mm-hmm. Not afraid in the sense that like mentally, but the soles of my feet were tingling when I thought to go to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Like I had a bodily response where my body is saying, you sure you want to do that? And then I get into my executive function and go, well, that happened all the way over there. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and I'm 2 hours away from the closest bastion of white supremacy in California, which would be Orange County. Or Central California that they call Calabama, you know, I'm far away. And then the other part of my brain goes, yeah, but the guy in New York drove 2 hours to shoot up that store because he was on a mission to kill Black people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so like I guess when I compare the two, I'm thinking, yeah, of course, white people go through things, but it's not the constant multi-front, systemic and personal, everyday assault, right? Mm-hmm. And so then that's where, and I'm not trying to challenge you all. I'm asking you this question before our listeners, right? For people who think, yeah, that might help Bill Gates, who doesn't have as many problems as I do, you know? But how will this help me? You know, what is the usefulness of this in the kinds of daily routine kind of challenges that are not going to stop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that comes up for me when you talk about that, Andre, is it comes back to that agency thing that I started with, you know, it's about having access to choice. And I think one of the things mindfulness, and I'll just speak for myself, and meditation does for me, is it lets me take inventory for my reality, you know, for what's actually happening, actually happening in my world, what's actually happening in my body, you know, so that I can take that information and have a choice in how I respond. As opposed to these autopilot responses that my body and my mind have been conditioned to live out of without me having any choice in the matter, you know? Yeah. And so I think when I think of my own practice, I think of an opportunity to take the reins back in my life. You know, so much of my existence has been waiting for someone else to come along and save me. You know, like whether that was my mother or my father or my partner or my children, whatever these things that I thought would come along and change the conditions of my life, you know? And something about this practice has helped me find my way back to my own reins. Like I'm an authority. And I think a lot of what has happened is we've been disconnected from our ability to trust ourselves as an authority, to trust our bodies, to trust our experiences, you know, all of that. And so it's not that mindfulness and meditation suddenly solves all of that. It's it's like a restoring of the connection to your own self. So when I sit, I'm actually taking an opportunity to meet myself again, but beyond the voices, beyond all of these things around me. I'm taking a moment to gather the pieces of myself. And so that's not this mind-blowing thing that's going to change everyone in the world and all of our conditions. It's a practice, right? It's something that we can bring for ourselves regularly. And I think one of the things I also think about this practice is it's like a proactive practice. It's like when we're in the midst of the pain and suffering, it's really difficult to go into meditation when you're already stimulated and there's a lot going on. This is something that is with us for the long run. So,
And Ashley, to your point about agency, when I think about meditation practices and things like yoga, I always remember that there's a reason that under colonialism, these practices were banned because they are so empowering to us on an individual and collective level. And that is the reason that when people wanted to oppress us, they wanted to disconnect us from those practices. I am so excited about this app. Can people join this app now? What's the timeline of it? And how can we get on it?
Yes. The answer is yes. you can absolutely join it. You can download True Voice in the App Store. We're in all the app stores. You can download it. You'll receive an invitation within a couple of days. It's invite only right now. And that's not for exclusivity. That's because our priority is safety. And one of the things we're really intentional about, because this is a live community, is keeping it safe, specifically for Black and Brown folks. And so we take our time with how we're building and growing this. It's available. We're in there. We have practices happening. Shabazz and I lead practices Monday through Friday. We have recorded meditations where you can hear us and mindfulness talks with some of the community leaders out here doing this work. And more than anything, we're trying to build a community where people feel like they can come and show up as their vulnerable self. You know, it's like we don't want to have a place where there's one more thing to put on. You know, we want to be able to talk about what's really happening in our lives and feel safe enough to do that. I think safety is how we get a chance to heal and change and grow. And so we're an incubator for that. Well, that's at least what we're trying to be. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
We are unfortunately running low on time. I feel like there's so much more that we could get into.
So much more.
In this conversation. So we'll just have to continue another time.
Okay.
But we always want to know from everyone that comes on the show. Oh, y'all know because you've listened. So what keeps you showing up for the work?
You know, I you knew me when I had a real, real crazy problem. I had this big high top fade, and you know I was, you remember that? Remember
that?
It was like, wow, it was wild. And then one day, and I had this big powerful job in the creative industry in New York City, and I thought I was on top of the world, you know, like doing all the fancy stuff and making tons of money hand over fist. And then my hair started falling out. I lost all the hair in my body. All of it. And it made me sort of re-examine, like, what is this about? Like, what is this all for? And I quit that. I quit the industry. I went on a journey to sort of unravel, like, what am I? What am I doing? You know, working for 20 plus years in the creative industry, you know, and just thinking that like I wanted to be successful, and that idea of success was very much just sort of like capitalist picture, right, of success. And I looked at home, and I remember I'm experiencing all this success, and I'm snapping on my kids when they act crazy. Like I couldn't have and I was like, something's out of whack. And so I remember just thinking like, I have to find another way. I have to find a new relationship with my sons. I have to find a new relationship to myself. I have to learn how to take care of myself. Yeah. I need to be my champion. You know, I remember one time Ashley sat me down and she was just like, look, Shabazz, I can't figure out your health stuff anymore. I can't tell you what doctors go to. I'm not going to book your thing. Like, you got to do what? You're not. Yeah. No. Book your own doctor appointment. And, you know, all these things together made me realize I have to be in control of, I have to be in charge of how I take care of me. I'm the boss of me.
Yeah.
And I think that when I can see the suffering that I cause for myself, when I see the pain that I heap on myself, is I begin to see the pain that I cause on my sons and my wife and my community, my neighborhood, my block and my community. Mm-hmm. And when I can begin to sort of take steps to relieve that suffering that I cause myself and I cause my community, then I make my community and my family and my block and all the things better. And it all starts with me. It starts with me being my healthiest self, because the more that I can be that and I show up for myself, the more I can show up for all the people around me. So that's what keeps me, is keeping me, is that, keeping myself alive.
Amazing.
I would say my grandparents are coming up for me. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother and grandfather were civil rights activists. Mm. And growing up, I was steeped in those stories, you know, of how they integrated.
President of the NAACP. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, you know.
integrated schools in Virginia. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, there's so much. And those were the stories of my childhood, right? And my family's pride, my mom, my aunts and my uncles, we would hear those stories with pride. But I also witnessed in all of their fighting and all of their standing up for us in our generation, I also witnessed the pain that they were in, you know, and I was aware of that as a child, and I wanted to do something about that. And I think that is part of what led me to my healing profession in the first place, if I'm quite honest, is I wanted to heal my family. I wanted to give my family a path, you know, I wanted to connect the dots for all of that. And so in that way, I think that I'm continuing the legacy of my grandparents, you know, and I saw my grandfather burn out in this work. And so I'm continuing that legacy. And then the other part of that is one day I was driving the kids home, our boys home from school, and we got on this conversation about money. Somehow we're talking about, you know, the value of money and things like that. And my oldest son, he says, you know, but mom, money's not the most important thing. And I looked and I kind of took that moment. I was like, okay, well, what is the most important thing? And he said, taking care of yourself. And I just leaned back and I was like, my work is done. I've done my work. I can die tomorrow. You know, and my kids get the idea. And so I say all that because for me, it's like, it's the, it's the passing of the torch in that way. And so, legacy.
It's been such a joy to have you both on the show. We'll have to have you back sometime to keep talking. And everyone listening, you need to go download True Voice. See if you get in. If you're
check it out though, Dre. You know what?
I mean, but what if Foghorn and Leghorn wants to join True Voice?
Hey, look, definitely jump in True Voice, but check it out. Actually, the thing for us is like even more than downloading True Voice. Is to go and find a practice of taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
What is it that you're going to do to take care of yourself? What are the things that you're going to do? How are you going to get silent and quiet enough to hear your own voice, to hear what's inside of you and make space for the things that are inside of you?
Yeah.
How are you going to get comfortable with taking 5 minutes of silence? And this is a test. If you can't sit down for 5 minutes of silence for yourself, then your body is completely dysregulated. And your body is begging you to learn how to slow down so that you can hear yourself. And so this is more than download True Voice. The message that Ashton and I come with is that we have the ability to slow down and hear what God is saying to us if we can quiet ourselves enough to listen. That's what our heart is to inspire people to that, to find ways to take care of themselves. And for us, we've used meditation as a tempo for that, because we found that helpful for us. But I can't leave here without saying this to your community, because this is why we're here. This is why we've showed up today.
Amazing. As always, we're going to turn it over to Ross. He's going to tell you more about our show. We're so glad that you all are listening again, no matter who you are, where you are, what you're going through. I want you to remember three things. A new world is possible. It does not have to be this way, because we are tomorrow makers. And you'll hear from us next time.
Bye.
Yes!
Thanks for choosing to listen today. You can catch up with our hosts online. Trish's is at Trish's Music, that's spelled T-R-I-S-H-E-S, Music, on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. Andre is at The Andre Henry on Instagram and TikTok, and at Andre Henry on Twitter. Catch the songs you heard today and more of their music on Spotify. If you'd like to support what we're doing here and see the video of Andre and Trish's conversation, you can join the Patreon at www.patreon.com/AndreHenry. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.